Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. August 5, 2021. What lessons is nature preparing for us? We are at the final stage of the global correction, called the last generation, and therefore, we must awaken each other. Otherwise, nature will increase the pressure on us, day after day, to show that we are in a very serious and dangerous process. We are spoiled and do not understand that a small change in nature is enough for us to start dying from hunger, scorching heat, and catastrophic floods. We do not yet know what tests nature is preparing for us, to teach us, bit by bit. If it were simply to break us, it would be easy to do. But the Creator does not want that. He does everything to teach us. Through corporeal adversity, He helps us discover through what internal changes we can rise above physical suffering. By building a spiritual network of connections on top of what is happening on the corporeal level, we will wake up more and more and reveal what is happening in the global system. Fires, floods, and extreme heat are the reaction of nature to what is happening in the relations between people. And in order to put everything in order, it is necessary only to establish correct connections between us. The more we unite, the more we will soften the attitude of the Creator toward us, and manifest the same forms in a positive way. Instead of flooding, we will get a lot of water for beneficial use. Instead of fires, we will get warmth, and even viruses will become useful. We can make all phenomena favorable. Everything depends only on our attitude toward nature. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, July 30, 2021, Ibur, impregnation, and Yenika, nursing. My new article on LinkedIn, Time to Revamp Our Thinking About Our Children. According to an essay published on July 20, 2021 in the Journal of Adolescence, over the past several years, there has been a significant increase in loneliness at school among teenagers. The essay, titled Worldwide Increases in Adolescent Loneliness, written by acclaimed professor of psychology Jean M. Twenge and several other researchers, concludes that between 2012 and 2018, adolescent loneliness increased. In 36 of 37 countries worldwide, nearly twice as many adolescents in 2018 scored high in loneliness than in 2000, with much of the increase occurring after 2012. However, the researchers add that even with the recent increases, the majority of students did not report high levels of loneliness. So are adolescents lonely or are they not? I think that the problem is not that they are lonely, but that we don't understand how they think and feel, and therefore often attribute to them emotional states that they are not experiencing because we think they're built like us, but they are not. Today's teenagers are smarter, more sensitive, and more understanding than we often think. They look at us, at what we have, or have not, accomplished, at the consequences of our actions, and draw their own conclusions. They're not as excited as we were about academic titles, about traveling, or about accumulating wealth and possessions. Everything is accessible for them at the touch of a finger on the cell phone, and they don't have the drive that we had to achieve to be somebody. They see how happy it has made us, and what a world we've built because of it. When I look at my grandchildren, they don't seem to me like they are suffering. It is a new generation with a different character. They ask pragmatic questions, they want to know what they will get out of everything they do, and when they don't get satisfactory answers, they order a pizza delivery and stay at home with their social media apps and games. At best, they might ask a friend or two over, but often, they will communicate with friends only on social media. Yet, the fact that they are alone does not mean that they are lonely. Some are lonely, and some are not, just as we were. For them, being alone for many hours does not mean that they are lonely. When we wanted to socialize, we went outside. When they want to socialize, they go online. They're living in a different world, and the sooner we realize it, the easier we will make it on them to grow in it. We must support them and care for them, but we must also let them grow on their own terms and in their own way. They'll have their challenges like the rest of us, and they will need our help, but we must not force our worldview on them, since it will only prevent them from developing the worldview that they need to have in today's reality, where everything is mixed and interconnected, physical and virtual, local and global, alone and together. I am not implying that we should not see that they do not go the wrong way. However, we should also not force them to go our way just because we think our way was right for us. In fact, if it was right for us, when we grew up, it is certainly not right for them, since the world where we grew up doesn't exist anymore, we're living in a different world. Therefore, today's adolescents must find their own way, and we must help them search for it with confidence, knowing that they have a cushion to fall back on if they need to. In addition to the above, I would teach them the basics of the wisdom of Kabbalah. The wisdom of Kabbalah is the science of connecting people, so learning the principles of positive connections with people can be very helpful in a hyper-connected world. I think that if we adopt this approach, we will go through our children's adolescence more easily and pleasantly. My new article on LinkedIn, How to Make Good Decisions. Ostensibly, we are constantly making decisions. In practice, it is not at all certain that to this day we have made a single truly significant decision about the meaning of life or about the inner potential that is hidden inside us. If we stop for a moment and map out everything we go through during a typical day or week, we would find that most of the actions we make are out of necessity in our reality. We have commitments, preset frameworks of action, agendas. The main choices we make are related to the most pressing things we need to take care of, and here it is important to know in advance what we are going to do, and how to prioritize our tasks and plan our time to fulfill our responsibilities. In mundane decisions, it can be a good idea to consult with experts, hear the opinions of people we trust, and so on. However, in substantive decisions that pertain to the essence of our own life, it is important to listen to the inner voice within us. Only. And here we should strive for the innermost voice that is truly ours, and not the opinions of other people, even of parents or friends. We have to listen to our authentic inner self to answer the most significant questions of our very existence: who am I? What am I drawn to? What do I want to live for? If we feel the inward urge to determine what matters most to us, in life, our most meaningful life goals, all the daily decisions will follow the lead and fall into place smoothly. In general, it is important to keep balance between mind and emotion, and it is not simple. On the one hand, the mind helps to make decisions in places where emotion is lacking. On the other hand, if we only follow our mind, then we may not be able to appreciate the wider picture that ensures making the right decision. Therefore, a balance between the mind and the emotion means that they will complement each other in such a way that the emotional actions will be the result of an informed process, and the rational decisions will be such that we could also sustain them emotionally. At the most advanced level of development, we learn to be above ourselves, meaning above our emotion and mind, above our habits and thought patterns. This is already a level of spiritual development in which we explore our inner self, what we need to correct within ourselves, and how to use these discernments to make the best decisions. The wisdom of Kabbalah explains to us what our nature is, what the nature of the world around us is, and where evolution necessarily advances the human race. And when the whole map of development begins to unfold before us, we discover what we can influence and what we cannot, where exactly our free choice is. This describes the decision-making process at the highest possible level for a fulfilling and meaningful life. My new article on LinkedIn, Hiroshima, have we learned the lesson? In the late 1940s and early 50s, The great Kabbalist and thinker Balha Sulam wrote a series of essays and notes that were later compiled into what became known as the Writings of the Last Generation. In those writings, Balha Sulam described the challenges he saw in humanity's situation, what he feared those challenges might lead to, and how he thought humanity should resolve them. In part one of the writings, Balha Sulam paints a very gloomy picture of the future of humanity unless we carry out our duty to shift our efforts from thinking only of ourselves to thinking about others. In his words, "I have already said that there are two ways to discover the completeness, the path of light or the path of suffering. Hence, the Creator, nature, has given humanity technology, until they have invented the atom and the hydrogen bombs. If the absolute ruin that they are destined to bring upon the world is still not evident to the world, they can wait for a third world war, or a fourth one. The bombs will do their thing, and the relics who remain after the ruin will have no other choice but to take upon themselves this work where both individuals and nations do not work for themselves more than is necessary for their sustenance, while everything else they do is for the good of others. If all the nations of the world agree to it, there will no longer be wars in the world, for no person will be concerned with his own good whatsoever, but only with the good of others. Have we learned our lesson? Are we afraid of the bomb enough to relinquish the pursuit of power and, instead, work for the sake of others in order to secure a peaceful future for humanity? I don't know the answer to this question. I know that humanity is still fearful of the horrendous consequences of nuclear weapons, but I don't know if this worry is enough to block ruthless and reckless leaders from using them regardless. The problem is that we are built with two very different qualities within us. One quality is the reasonable one, which warns that unless we exercise restraint, we could obliterate human civilization in an instant. The other quality says that having such power means that the minute you have it, you become the ruler of the world, and this is an irresistible enticement. If people felt connected to each other, we wouldn't go in that direction to begin with, we wouldn't go to war, much less a nuclear war. But since we do not feel connected, our only consideration is the self-centered one, and in such a state, no caution influences us. Currently, even if we know that once we embark on nuclear warfare we will seal our own doom, and we do know it, we will still go through with it. When hatred rules, it knows no limits. Because hatred sets the tone in our relationships, the only way to prevent us from tipping the scales toward a nuclear war is to change human nature from egotism to altruism, from putting me before we. Nothing else will prevent us from setting off an inferno on a global scale. Such a flip of character will not come easily, it will require everyone's willingness to go through the process. If only some people go through it while others maintain their selfish mindset, the selfish will exploit those who are attempting to change, and this will thwart the entire process. For this reason, it is imperative that as many people as possible know what lies ahead if we continue on the self-centered trajectory, and that we can change it if we want. People must know that they have a choice, since choice means hope, and hope prompts action. If we act together, we will build a good future for everyone. If we remain apart, none of us will have any future. According to needs. Question: in my social life I have a lot of loving, open friends, who know how to give. But they don't even want to hear about Kabbalah, just like me before. Will they be able to develop, attain the upper world, and cross the Muxum without Kabbalah? Answer: if a person does not have any desire for this yet, then of course he cannot do anything. And why does he need it? A person moves forward based on what he lacks, what he wants. Look at yourself. You see a live example in front of you, yourself. As a person develops, he sees that he is in a world in which everything is going in the wrong direction. By exploring it, he begins to understand that human egoism, our nature, is to blame for everything, and we must do something with it. If he does start reading Kabbalistic sources at least a little, He will learn that all our problems stem from egoism and are inherent in nature in order to lift us above our nature to a higher, next level. From CAB TV's video conference. The head and the body of the system. Question. There is Pareto's 80-20 rule. This universal truth about the imbalance of inputs and outputs is what became known as the Pareto principle, or the 80-20 rule. The generalization became, 80% of results will come from just 20% of the action, Forbes. Do you think that with the widespread knowledge of Kabbalah, it would be possible to influence the consciousness of 80% of people by changing that of 20%? Answer, this percentage can be much lower, down to 1%. As it usually happens, one shepherd walks ahead of the herd and the whole flock follows him. So, it is possible. The only problem is to create this dependency. Anyway, all the people will have to be taught the system of right connections so that they understand the idea of a leader and follow him for their own good. This requires very serious work in the team in order to unite them. In this case, you can succeed very fast, especially if you understand the current state of humanity in any society or nation. Whatever the percentage of the team, the most important thing is that all 100% of its participants understand the common goal, imagine that they benefit from the right interaction, and that their leaders really work at a very serious, objective, altruistic level, in pursuing the goal that is clear to everyone and is for their benefit. If this can be brought to the entire collective, then there is no problem, one person can manage them all. They will be happy to obey him and unite around him because he will be considered the head while the rest form the body of this system. From CAB TV's Science of Management. Rising above the beastly life. Question. What does the Tree of Life symbolize? Answer. The Tree of Life is the force and the goal to which we must come. We get to understand it precisely with the help of the serpent. There are many trees in the Garden of Eden. You can walk there and eat whatever you want. This means that there is a part of our world where you normally exist. And there is such an egoistic quality that when triggered it does not allow you to live in peace and you must begin to ascend from it to the upper world. This egoistic quality is awakened not simply out of the blue, but as a result of the serpent's work on you. He makes you taste the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Then you begin to feel that you need to rise above your beastly life because the Garden of Eden is a place for animals, for angels. And the purpose of creation is to raise you higher. Therefore, you need this serpent, this huge egoistic desire, that will wake you up and give you the opportunity to rise. You need to taste the fruit from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Between the knowledge of good and evil you raise yourself, absorb both good and evil, and become a real person, similar to the Creator. From CAB TV's The Power of the Book of Zohar number 16. The Siege Upon Egoism. Prophets, Joshua, 6:15-6:16, 6:20-6:21. And it was on the seventh day, that they rose early at the dawning of the day, and they circled the city after the same manner seven times, only on that day they circled the city seven times. And it was at the seventh time, the priests blew with their trumpets, and Joshua said to the people, Shout, for the Lord has given you the city. And the people shouted, and the priests blew with the trumpets, and it was when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, that the people shouted with a great shout, and the wall fell down in its place and the people went up into the city, every man opposite him, and they took the city. And they completely destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, young and old, and ox, and sheep, and ass, with the edge of the sword. All of the above takes place in the people who allegedly attacked the city. This city is inside them. They attack their remaining egoism and destroy it at all levels, inanimate, vegetative, and animate. That is, They take the life away from all desires that still exist in them, but are already separated from them by a wall and are defined as opposed to them. Question: what is the egoistic walled city inside me? Answer: it is all our remaining egoism manifesting in front of us, as such. And there is no other way to conquer it but through a siege and precisely by actions like blowing a horn. Question: what is this mysterious number 7, which repeats itself all the time? Answer: these are Hesed, Gvura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, and Malkhut, 7 steps that one must consistently ascend in order to completely destroy the egoistic intention for one's own sake. Egoism itself is not destroyed and continues to be used with the correct intention. From CabTV's Secrets of the Eternal Book, July 12, 2021. Is there is none else besides him a mystical mantra? Question: why do you speak about the need to attain there is none else besides him so often? Why is it so hard to understand that everything stems from above? Many people know that. Is there is none else besides him a unique mantra in the wisdom of Kabbalah? Answer: no, it is not a mantra, but an attainment, which means a feeling. We are in this one unique force, which totally controls us, and we clearly feel it. You cannot escape it anymore. It is in this feeling that we must exist. It is indeed true. This is the only force of nature. Even if you speak to scientists and physicists, they will not negate this fact. They will say, yes, it is obviously so, although we have not discovered it yet. From CabTV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, April 28, 2019. The way to the goal. Question from Facebook: free will is how to attain the Creator, but if our actions are predetermined, is the way to attain the Creator also predetermined? Answer: the way to the Creator consists of 2 branches. One way is straight, smooth, and comfortable, like a highway. The other way is bumpy and you cannot drive a Mercedes on this road, but only a cart pulled by a pair of worn-out horses. So our choice is in which way a person chooses that. The goal is set, the starting point is also. It is only which path that depends on a person. There are people who overcome it quickly and are already at the end of the way, already enjoying the attainment of eternity and wholeness above this world. You don't need to die in order to attain this. You can attain it in our world. There are, however, people for whom it will take a long time to reach the ultimate goal. Still, everyone will reach it, but the question is how much suffering they will have to undergo. The role of the wisdom of Kabbalah is to guide a person on how to follow the fast and easy road toward the predetermined goal. From CabTV's Answers to Questions from Facebook, March 10, 2019. The way to freedom. Question: what reason does the Creator have for looking at a reality that has already been determined? Answer: the reason is very simple. First, bring the person to the possibility of a true freedom of choice. And to do that, the person must transcend himself, transcend his nature. Second, he must replace his nature with the nature of the Creator, because only the Creator is free. And then, by ascending to the level of the Creator and acquiring the characteristic of bestowal, he will constantly be able to measure himself in relation to the Creator. Achieving the level of the absolutely free Creator is the result of all of our work. From CabTV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, May 12, 2019.